Welcome to the Pennsylvania Scholastic Football Coaches Association podcast, sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Incorporated. The PSFCA podcast is hosted by Chad Brubaker. We will be addressing news regarding Pennsylvania high school football, speaking with current and past head football coaches and players, upcoming PSFCA initiatives and events, really anything Pennsylvania football. Now, here is your host, Chad Brubaker.
You are listening to the PSFCA podcast. I'm your host, Chad Brubaker. We will highlight all things Pennsylvania football, including news, events, interviews, and more. We will be publishing once per month and will take you all around Pennsylvania football and the PSFCA. If you have a question regarding PA football, email us at psfcapodcast@gmail.com. We may feature your question on a future podcast. The PSFCA podcast is sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Inc., which offers quarterback and wide receiver camps run by Jim Cantafio and two-time Super Bowl champion Chad Henne. They have kicking camps and team camps at Millersville and East Stroudsburg Universities, and they also offer private individual quarterback instruction. We have been taking our teams to SVS team camps for years, and the value and the instructional time that you get there is unrivaled. Go to www.svssports.com to learn more. Each episode of the PSFCA podcast will also include news from around Pennsylvania. The PIAA has approved to change the Junior High Heat Act period to 5 days, as well as reviewing the competition formula. That explanation is listed on the PIAA website. As for PSFCA news, the Hall of Fame class announced for 2024, with the ceremony to be held at Cumberland Valley, will include Mike Matta, Jim Roth, Brett Stover, Dennis Etze, Carmen DeFrancesco, and Dave Ginrich. A lot of names you might recognize on there. We will do more information on that in May's podcast and highlight each of those Hall of Fame coaches. In other PSFCA news, information on membership will be released in July. There will be changes to the membership structure, so look for that. Additionally, clinic information for 2025 will also be released during the summer. We are very excited about our partnership with Cumberland Valley High School. All-Star games this year will be held at Cumberland Valley. The PSFCA has entered a partnership with the NFL regarding girls flag football. Girls flag football will be recognized during the Big 33 game this year, with more details to come. The PSFCA Community Aid Fan Fest will start at 3 p.m. prior to the Big 33 game on May 26th. There will be all kinds of vendors as well as activities for children and adults alike. Look soon for the PSFCA Diversity Committee and their summer schedule of activities. They are working on free online clinics as well as other initiatives. Lastly, the PSFCA State Combine locations have been set. Details can be found at www.big33.org. Right now, we are planning to hold three events: May 11th at Perkiomen Valley High School from 8 a.m. to 12, May 16th at Bell Vernon High School from 5 to 9 p.m., and May 17th at Cumberland Valley High School, also from 5 to 9 p.m. Again, find more information on that at big33.org. PSFCA is holding two East-West games, one for big schools, which is 4A through 6A, and one for small schools, which is 1 through 3A. Those games will take place on May 19th at Cumberland Valley High School. The small school game is at noon, with the big school game following at 5 p.m. Come out and support PSFCA and high school football. There has never been a Super Bowl that didn't have a Big 33 alum on the roster of one of the teams. This year's Big 33 game will be held on May 26th at Cumberland Valley High School at 7 p.m. Come out to Cumberland Valley on the 26th of May to experience all the pageantry that is associated with the Big 33 game, as well as future college stars from Maryland and Pennsylvania. You are listening to the PSFCA podcast, sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Inc. Go to www.svsports.com to see what camps, mini clinics, and other instruction are available for you and your players. Okay, so one of the things that comes up quite a bit is how players are chosen, nominated, chosen, evaluated for the Big 33 and East-West games. So I have joining me now Ed Gallagher, who's the head coach of Sallerton High School. He's also a past president of PSFCA and has been involved for how many years, Ed?
It's close to 20 right now with State Coaches Association.
Yeah, so almost 20 years with the State Coaches Association. And Ed is very involved in the process for pulling kids' names in and redistributing them, compiling them, et cetera. So thanks for joining me, Ed. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll start with, nominations. Nominations come from all across the state, from high school coaches primarily. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand right from the top is that coaches must be, or the schools must be, a member of PSFCA to be able to be even evaluated.
Correct.
And so, this time of year, there's always maybe some pushback in terms of why a kid was not selected. And really, a lot of times, and I'm sure you know this behind the scenes, Ed, oftentimes more than not, the school is not a paying member of PSFCA.
Yes, that's definitely been a concern over the past few years, that people are wondering why this player didn't make the game. Oftentimes either the coach didn't nominate him, or he was or their school was not a member of the PSFCA. And you don't have to be a full-blown member, you just have to at least have one coach on your staff as a member. And we have definitely affordable ways that you can do that.
Yeah, so that's a big thing. And I guess because people don't know that process, sometimes there's maybe some unwarranted pushback in regards to why this kid wasn't chosen or that kid wasn't chosen.
Yes.
So the nominations come in electronically. Now we've advanced into the modern world. It used to be you had to submit a piece of paper. And then you are the actual point person on the compilation of those lists. You want to talk about that a little bit, Ed?
Sure. Every year in October, I get an email from somebody at the office for Big 33, and they ask me to look over the criteria just so we have all the cells correct on the online form in case we want to change something. For example, we went from nominating a Sam linebacker, a Mike linebacker, and a Will linebacker a couple of years ago to just inside linebacker or outside linebacker. So there's always a little change or two that we make on the form that makes it easier for our evaluation groups to get their work done when they're in the room. So Carolyn or somebody else at the office will send out the template for what it looks like. I'll either approve it or tell her to tweak one or two things. Copy Gary on it so he's at least aware of what we're doing. And then people submit their applications online or nominations online for the players. And the office compiles a huge spreadsheet of all their addresses and names and positions and heights and weights and everything else. And then they send me that huge, massive spreadsheet. And I just start to hack it up into little sections that are more usable for our directors to make their selections. I try to break it down into what size school they are, so that when we pick them for the other games, if they don't make Big 33, we make sure that they're assigned to the right East or West team, big or small school division. And then I'll submit to each committee. We usually have about six committees or seven committees with five or six coaches on each of them that is going to evaluate. We give them 2 weeks to evaluate the players at their particular position. So once they send it back to me, I prepare it, send it back to them, and we go to the meeting and look at the results of what we have. It's
so
definitely
let me jump in right there, Ed. So you send out the basically the position groups, the kids that were nominated from each position group to the committees assigned for each position.
Yes.
And then from there, and this is something I think that's very important, each committee evaluates every single kid on that form. So, you know, we go online, kids have their huddle films up, and we evaluate. So, you know, how many kids were nominated at wide receiver, say, this year, approximately?
I'd say we had about close to 90 wide receivers nominated this year. It was a big group this year.
Yeah. So that takes quite a long time. So obviously, we look at every single one of those kids and their films, and, you know, we have 2 weeks to do that from the time that you send that out. That's a daunting task.
It is. Yes. And it's a daunting task for all the directors to watch the video. And then, once I get their rankings back in, it definitely makes the process a lot less biased, I will say, because in each committee, we'll make sure that we have, if there's a committee of seven directors, we'll make sure that we have either three from the West and four from the East or vice versa, just to make sure it's balanced. And we're not, you know, trying to favoritize some particular side of the states. Once they get those in, I do the same. I do another layer of trying to make it more objective by removing the highest score, because there's sometimes that a coach doesn't find the film or watches the wrong thing or was looking at the wrong number, what it was, and all of a sudden we have a kid that's averaging about the fifth best wide receiver, and the one coach ranked them as 68 or something like that, maybe because he watched something differently. So I throw out that highest score, take the results of what remains, and then sort it and send it back to the committee chair so that he has that to work off of when we go to the actual selection meeting.
So it's really interesting. So let's just use wide receivers since we brought that up. So that committee of seven coaches from across the state, and again, it's important to note that, you know, they're equally distributed East and West. They are ranking those kids one to, let's say there were 90, 1 to 90.
Right.
And then you take all of their, essentially their grades or their ranking order, and you compile all of those and then throw out the, you know, the worst number basically. And then create an average. And then that creates the ranking 1 to 90.
Yes.
So,
that still could be, once they go into the committee, that could be tweaked. But a lot of times most of the committees look at it and say, hey, we all watched this kid. We thought he was the best one, so he's in the game. You know, we thought this kid was the next best one, he's in the game. There's once in a while where we're picking five wide receivers where we say, all right, we have to decide whether this player should play at wide receiver or possibly at defensive back. And then that's the only thing that really gets subjective on that evening is what side of the ball are we selecting the player for? Because we do several times every year have guys that are selected for the game on both sides of the ball. And we just want to make sure we recognize enough kids from enough different schools and get the right kids in the game to give us our best chance to be successful.
And then from time to time, obviously, like say a kid is ranked the number three defensive back and the number 20 wide receiver, for instance, he would obviously have a better chance of going in as a defensive back. So those are all things that we look for. And then sometimes the coaches that have been selected for the Big 33 game, they have some input into how many we're taking from each position.
Yes. And the only last thing that the actual coaching staff has in play is that they can select the number of players that they want at each position. And oftentimes they'll take, for example, four receivers instead of five, and then they'll take an athlete that they might be able to use at wide receiver and maybe in passing situations as an extra defensive back. So that, you know, we do declare athletes once in a while to be a position. And then I try to get around to each of the rooms that the athlete could possibly come from and make sure that we're getting what the actual coaching staff wants for that particular year.
Yeah. So you got into a little bit, but that night is it used to be way longer night. When we were yeah. doing everything kind of in person. Now we have kind of done a lot of pre-work for the meetings, but it's still a long night. It still can be a long night because, you know, sometimes people have strong opinions and, you know, when you get into the committee room, you know, people ask questions like, hey, why did you guys think this kid was the eighth best? You know, I had him at two, you know, and then we go back and we rewatch that just to make sure we didn't miss something or, you know, for whatever reason, that kid's eighth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the committees meet, they come back to the main room, and meet as an association. And, then we have some other discussions. One of the things that we've kind of tried to do is, as Ed, you mentioned earlier, is try to distribute throughout the state as best we can. And our kind of law or bylaw or protocol, whatever you want to call it, for that is we can only take X amount of kids from a particular school initially.
Yes.
And what's that number?
I'm pretty sure that we allow everyone to have at least two players if they are selected. Once there are three or more players selected from one school, the association has to vote to accept or reject the fact that we're going to allow that school to have three or four or any number of players.
Yeah. So then once that takes place, then basically we show the team. Well, we show the team, and then if there are multiple players from a particular school beyond two, we have to vote to accept that or reject that. And then pretty much that's the team. Now, one of the things that has happened, obviously, over especially the past few years is early enrollees. And sometimes we know up front that a kid's already at a school, and a coach nominated him anyway, and then we have to pull that kid out. And then if there are dropouts, how that whole process works.
Okay. So yeah, early enrollees are one thing. Injuries would be another reason why a player could drop out of the game. I mean, sometimes kids go away for some reason on that particular weekend and can't make the game, but you know, with them in May, that's not as much of the case. But what happens is if a player is not able to play in the game or chooses not to play in the game, Gary sends a text out to me and three other people and says, we have this player from this school at this position that can't play in the game. Who's the next guy up? So once I get back from the meeting, I take all the final results and put them into a Google sheet that's shared with me and the people at the Big 33 office, and Gary, our executive director, Gary Cathell, and I believe Homer Delatre, the East-West coordinator, and at least one more person is on that thread. So there's probably like five or six people that are like checks and balances in terms of what the master list looks like after the game. So after the selection meeting. So if a player has to be replaced, I just go onto the Google Sheets. I look and I send in the group thread, this player is the next player up at defensive end. So Gary calls, make sure he can play in the game. Once he does, they go through the rest of the paperwork and add the player.
And that process can be, depending on the year, a lot.
It can. And it creates a ton of work for Homer Delatre. Because again, most times, I mean, almost every time that we lose a player in Big 33, we're actually replacing him from one of the four East-West rosters now. So there's kind of a trickle-down effect that happens where, you know, the player maybe was in the big school East team, so he moves up, and then we got to replace him on the big school East roster. So yes, that Google sheet about 4 weeks in, or even right now, if I went and looked at it, is just a total mess. There's a, yeah. this kid, this kid didn't play or is decided not to play on this day, replaced here. This kid declined the game, this kid replaced him. And there's just a lot of there's a lot of moving parts, but there's a lot of, we document all the movements in a column on that sheet so that everyone understands, you know, this kid was selected for the game, but unfortunately either declined or is already at school, as we said, has happened a couple of times, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. So we kind of got a little ahead of ourselves, but then essentially the Big 33 team is chosen, all right? And then the guys that are next in line, depending on what type of school they are in, either 4 through 6A or 1 through 3A, and whether they are East-West, those guys become the East-West nominees.
Correct. And again, just like with Big 33, each of the head coaches that we have selected for each of those games gets to take as many from each position as they want. I think it's a maximum of 38 players that we have on each roster. So, you know, if they want to take 6 wide receivers instead of what the Big 33 took, then, you know, more kids get an opportunity at that level to do that. Some coaches won't use a tight end in the game, so they won't take the next tight end that would be selected. So it's just going to be a matter of preference at that point. Homer does a lot of that work. Like I said, I do a lot of the compilation and get it set up, but once the Big 33 team is set, Homer has a ton of work to do to get the East-West rosters in place. And I know Mike Farr has been helping them with the small school game the past couple of years since we split that up. So they have a lot of a lot of legwork to get the rosters together for those 4 teams and handling those replacements.
Yeah, and so we have gone to the other thing. In addition, we've gone to 2 East-West games, one for big school, one for small school, which has happened in the past few years. There used to just be one. So again, that's adding work to certain people's plates that are in charge of that type of thing.
It does. But the nice part about that is there were a lot of small school coaches in our state that weren't nominating their players because they thought they had no chance of getting in a game. Well, we gave them another option of getting into a game. We created a game just for the small school players that's giving more kids an opportunity to play in one of the state all-star games.
And just one other thing, maybe going back, you know, a lot of times when you, let's just talk about pushback a little bit. We mentioned that earlier about, you know, sometimes kids aren't nominated. The other thing that a lot of people probably don't understand is we don't really consider stats. You know, we're evaluating the player's film. So if a kid runs for 8,000 yards in his career, like, we're only watching his senior film. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, obviously if a kid rushes for 2,000 yards his senior year, that does not mean that he's the best running back in the state, or a quarterback, for instance, or whatever, a wide receiver that, you know, catches 100 balls for 1,500 yards. It doesn't mean he's necessarily the best wide receiver in the state. And I think that's something that people really need to understand as well.
They do. Stats really have nothing to do with it, but obviously a player that has accumulated those stats should jump out on the film. So when you watch them, you'd think that, you know, they would show up. But, you know, I even remember 15 some years ago, just going in to evaluate the running backs and, you know, thinking, all right, I have a pretty good running back. It's getting recruited by all these places. He should probably be in the top 15. And then you go into the room and start watching some of these players. And there's some outstanding players in our state. And it's easy to see a kid really shine in a local area on a Friday night, you know, and everyone loving how great the player is. But when you put them up against some of the other players in the state, there's some really talented players. So it's a very objective process. And I think we do the best we possibly can to get the right kids in games.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, at certain positions, you might take 2 running backs. Well, so there's over 500 schools in the state. Everybody has a running back, and you're legitimately for the Big 33 game, maybe taking two. And the same thing with tight ends. You know, a lot of times we're only taking one tight end. So some of the positions are a little bit even more tough to get selected. You know, there's going to be 5 or 6 offensive linemen, 5 or 6 defensive linemen, 5 or 6 wide receivers, 5 or 6 D-backs. But, you know, You're only taking two quarterbacks most of the time, so that's got to be the top two guys.
Yeah, and that's quarterback and running back is always the toughest, you know, because it is. You see kids, and when you watch the film and the committees to evaluate those two positions, you're going to see a ton of plays. I mean, quarterbacks are going to throw for 2,000 yards. Running backs are going to run for 2,000 yards. You know, if you only look at the kids that did that, you still have a great competition, and we're only taking two of them. So right. It's just a lot. It's a really tough process, which is why we try to do the evaluations before we get there so that we're not watching all that video together and, you know, trying to pinpoint where we see strengths and flaws.
One of the things, too, I would say is we're also taking the kids that are ready now. You know, there might be a 6'7" lineman from some school. And, you know, he's going to be, he has obviously a tremendous ceiling, but we got to take the kids that are ready now. Like that kid kind of might be a project, maybe not fundamentally sound right now. So that's kind of the other thing that probably should be mentioned too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you can't totally remove the college football selection process out of it, because if a kid is offered by, let's say, 10 FBS schools, you know, we can't go into a meeting blindly not knowing that. We're going to know, you know, this kid is going here, this kid's going here. And you know, so that definitely has somewhat of an influence on how we evaluate them, because we know that those schools are out there evaluating those same kids and comparing them, and they're making lists. So, you know, they're getting paid to do it. we're doing the best we can, but they're getting paid to evaluate and offer scholarships to these players. So we're, you know, there is some assumption of what level of play they can be at. On that same hand, as you were just mentioning, you know, sometimes they're giving a scholarship to a kid that might project as something that might not be ready to play in the game. And that's what you were saying, especially with offensive linemen, because just sometimes their size alone will get them a scholarship. And then, but that doesn't mean they're one of the best linemen to play in the Big 33 game. We're preparing them for one game, not for 4 or 5 years of college.
Yeah, that's a great point. And some kids are going to change positions too, is another thing. You know, a 6'3" wide receiver that's going to a Big Ten school might end up being a tight end in a couple years. And again, that's the projection of the school taking that big body, but he's not really the best wide receiver, but he's going to be a pretty darn good tight end going forward. So, all right, Ed, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us more about this process. And, you know, I hope that people that listen to this have a better understanding. I think you did a great job of kind of breaking that down. And hopefully we get the word out there of how this works and maybe cut down on some of that pushback. But there's always going to be that, right? There's always going to be that.
Yep.
And even from coaches, too, who, at times we get pretty territorial and we love our kids and wonder, you know, I do laugh. I see people say this kid is, or hear a coach say this kid's going to be the best player in the state at this position or that position. And like, well, you haven't evaluated all the kids at that position. But, you know, you're just kind of making a statement of opinion that you're trying to pawn off as fact.
Yeah, and every year it's different. I mean, there are times where we're looking at running backs or quarterbacks, and there are seven of them that belong in the Big 33 game, and we can only pick two. But there are years where we're like, yeah, we could probably play this kid there, and we're kind of, you know, scrapping to put together what we think is our best option to win the game. So, you know, every year, you know, you could have that kid that you think, oh, this kid will definitely be a Big 33 game player when he's a senior, but you don't know that based on where the rest of the talent. I mean, if all the best quarterbacks are in the same class, then that's, you know, that's unfortunate for some.
Yeah. All right, Ed, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
No problem, John. Have a good day.
You too.
You are listening to the Pennsylvania Scholastic Football Coaches Association podcast, sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Incorporated. Now, back to the show with your host, Chad Brubaker.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Pat Mason and Roger Beidle. Pat Mason is from Nativity in District 11, and Roger Beidle is from Ligonier Valley in District 7, and they are this year's head coaches for the East-West All-Star Game in Pennsylvania. Welcome, guys.
Welcome. Thanks, Chad. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah. So do you guys, are you guys, do you guys know each other?
Yeah, we know each other. We went to college together at Lebanon Valley College, and we were teammates, and we were both there with under Jim Monas.
Okay. Jim Monas, are you going to share the graduation years, or are we going to avoid that?
Sure, why not? You know, I graduated in 95. I don't know. I was a little late. Took me a little longer. I don't know if I think Roger was a year ahead of me, I think.
2 years. I'm a 93 grad.
Yeah, see that? It took me a while.
There you go. So that's going to be interesting. You know, we got to get Lebanon Valley involved in this. The Dutchmen are well represented.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I'm sure Pat and I can work something out off the air where we have a little friendly wager on the game as
Oh,
well.
there you go. There you go. Winner
Yeah, no.
buys the loser, or I'm sorry, the loser buys the winner a meal at the Corvette.
Yeah.
All right. So
Maybe a Napoli pizza. Pat knows what that
you
is, but they're out of
go.
business now.
Now we're gonna pull them all out, right?
Yeah.
All right. So listen, we'll get right into it. Obviously, your peers picked you for this game, which is a great honor. I had the opportunity to do that in the past, and it's obviously a lot of fun. So, just to get started, obviously we know you both went to Lebanon Valley. Pat, what's your coaching background? You said in '95, Lebanon Valley. So, what was your pathway to this point?
Well, we'll go all the way back. I actually started out at Pine Grove. That was my first coaching position. Well, I actually I shouldn't say it was my first paid position. When I student taught, I student taught at Eastern Lebanon County, Elko. So
Yeah.
that's where I started off my career down there, and really liked it. But listen, the teaching gig back when I started was a lot different than it is today. I mean, there was not a whole lot of jobs open. You know, it was tough to get into the business, you know, and I was lucky to get an opportunity down there on that staff. And Roger will know a guy by the name of Tom Stone. Tom was on the staff at Elko, and we played together at Lebanon Valley, and he ended up getting me a little volunteer gig with those guys. And then I got my first paid position at Pine Grove, and I was lucky enough, you know, like I said, teaching jobs were tough to come by, but I was lucky enough. I taught for 1 year at North Schuylkill, and then I ended up catching on at Minersville, and that's where I went to high school, and that's where I'm still teaching today. 28 years I've been at Minersville. You know, I was assistant coach at Minersville for 13 years. Then I was head coach at Minersville for quite a while, you know, and I ended up leaving Minersville in 2015. Went down to Haven with a good friend of mine, Mike Farr. Mike coaches at Haven. I was an assistant for him for a year, and you know, I wanted to get back into being a head coach, and the nativity job opened up literally 18 days before the season started.
Oh.
I was actually at the Lebanon Valley camp with Mike with Haven going into the 2017 season. And
Wow.
I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And we ended up getting in there, got into our first game, and you know, Nativity doesn't have a whole lot of football history there. You know, we were a doormat for a while, and I'm proud to say we came over and kind of turned that program around, and hopefully we're moving in the right direction there. And there I am. So
Awesome.
I'm at the end of my career, obviously. So looking forward to retirement in a couple of years.
Gotcha. Okay. Roger, how about you? 93 Lev Val grad.
A different path. I was given an opportunity by Coach Jim Monas to join the Lebanon Valley staff my senior year when I was completing my student teaching at Cedar Crest High School. And that's kind of where I got my cut, I guess you'd say, cut my teeth in. And then from there's a great connection between Lebanon Valley and Gettysburg College. So after that first year, I went down to Gettysburg College and worked with Barry Streeter, who's actually a Lebanon Valley graduate as well. And just, you know, have that opportunity to know that side of the game and get involved with the college side. get involved in recruiting and see exactly what you need to do as a full-time coach really made me realize, you know, this is what I wanted to do. But, you know, back in the early 1990s, money's tough. And whenever a public schools opportunity comes along, and I grew up in Indiana County, which is on the other side of the state. So it was a chance for me to go home. I started working at a little small high school called Homer Center High School. And the first year I was there, we go on, win districts. We go something like 12-2. And I thought, wow, this is how it's supposed to be in high school all the time.
Man, this is easy.
This is easy. Yeah. and work there. And just like at that time with public schools, the craziness happens, furloughs, you know, last hired, first fired, those types of things. So I continued to coach at Homer Center for another year, but then I got a job in Somerset County at a little school called North Star High School. Worked there several years as a defensive coordinator. And I'll tell you, the biggest thing, Chad, is you come from the college level and then you go to the high school level. It's a big, big change. You know, you go from coaching your position, you know, every day of the week, and they're the only guys that you're getting ready, and you're only worried about a defensive game plan, to, oh, all of a sudden you have your linebackers for 20 minutes an entire week. Yeah, right. So that was a big change. And then I got some great advice from the head coach at North Star, and he said, you know, if you want to be a head coach and you want to be a head coach of a football program, this is going to sound crazy, but you need to coach a year in junior high football. And I looked at him, wow. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, and better yet, you're going to coach seventh grade football. I said, all right, coach, I'll do it. And it was one of the best things that I ever did, because at that point I realized, I mean, everything's about fundamentals. And we still live by that today. And then a teaching job came open in 2000. At Ligonier Valley High School, which is in Westmoreland County. And the opportunities were just a lot better, both for myself and for my family. I coached there for 3 years as an assistant coach. And in 2004, became the head football coach. And I inherited a program that we finished the season with 17 kids on the roster and really needed direction. And now here I am, 150 wins later and 21 years later, and I'm still the head coach. And, you know, it's one of the things, it's one of the greatest loves of my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, what a great story that he said that you had to go to seventh grade. I hope that there's going to be some younger coaches listening to this, because the mentality that I've seen, and I'm fortunate, I got a couple, you know, young coaches on our staff who kind of recognize they still have some things to learn. But you hear a lot about younger guys coming in like, what do you mean I'm not the coordinator right now? You know, yeah. He put you down in seventh grade. And by the way, you said it was one of the best things that maybe happened.
It was great. I mean, we had kids that quite honestly, Chad, they didn't even know how to put their equipment on.
Sure, I'm sure.
Know, we're going to away games and we're dressing half the kids. And the few kids that knew how to dress themselves, you know, they were kind of like the mentors, and they're like, no, yeah. that tail pad, you know, and again, this is a while back. And, you know, our kids don't even know probably how to put the pads in a girdle, because everything's the all in one girdle. They just slide on, you know, I got these kids it's true. I mean, they're taking that tailbone pad and they're putting it in the front and they think it's for personal protection. You know, I'm like, no, that doesn't go there, buddy.
Oh man, you know, we could write books.
Yeah.
So again, let's circle back to the East West game. I mean, you guys are were named, you know, head coaches. I'm not sure how many people know the process for that, but nominations come in from all across the state for East West and Big 33, and it's quite an honor if you get chosen. So you guys were chosen as a head coach. This would be a little different, right, than that roster of 17. So what are you looking forward to coaching most in the game?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm not looking forward to is continuing to collect this paperwork. this has been, I come from an old school mentality, you know, and you know, it's kind of like when I was told to do something by my coach, you know, I pretty much got it done, you know. it's crazy, you know. I was an assistant in this coach in this game a couple years ago, and you know, when you're the assistant, you know, that's why I was kind of smirking there when you were saying about how these young guys don't understand, you know, what they have to do to rise up to get the positions and to be the right coordinators and stuff. And I didn't know when I was the assistant coach, I was kind of like just going to practice, coaching my position and going about things. And now I'm getting emails about collecting paperwork, and I'm sending kids text messages and they're not responding. And then I'm text messaging their coach, like kind of telling on them, you know. It's oh my God, what a nightmare.
I went to that.
It's bad, you know. And then you're looking through your roster and you're knowing that, you know, obviously they're all great players, but you know, you only have two QBs, you know, so you're like, you know, hoping they have theirs in because you don't have anybody else, you know, and I'm going down. Oh, it's just, it's bad, but now I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I really am fortunate to be selected for this game. You know, I'm looking forward to, you know, like seeing some kids, you know, obviously, you know, we have Southern Columbia on our side, which you see them all the time, you know, at the state level and Steele High, and, you know, getting to see kids from different programs and kids that you've read about and maybe saw on film a little bit. I mean, it's kind of interesting because when I coached in this game last time, you know, there was, you know, in District 11, we had a lot of kids on the team. This time around, there's not so many District 11 kids here. So last time I knew a whole lot of the kids, you know, either coached against them or obviously seen them in some aspect. And this time, you know, we have a lot of kids from, you know, a lot of programs that I'm not even real familiar with, you know, from the Philadelphia area and places like that. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's easy to coach talent, you know, so it's going to be nice to deal with that.
Roger, how about you? What are you looking forward to the most coaching in this game?
Well, I mean, the first thing is when I coached in this game in 2017, I'm going to tell you, I was on a staff of just amazing, great coaches. I mean, these guys, after that game, their careers just all took off. And we've become great friends. We call each other all the time. We bounce ideas off one another. And they became some of my best friends in the coaching ranks. So I'm hoping to have the same relationship with the guys on my staff. I mean, I have an outstanding staff, couple guys that have been around a bit longer than others and a couple that are new. And you know, I've been around a long time. I've been coaching a long time, and I'm just hoping that maybe I can be a mentor to them. And create and grow that relationship that I still have to this day with the guys I coached with back in 2017. And then also, I mean, think about it. We love coaching, and now we get an opportunity to almost basically get an extra season in before our season starts and we get into the summer. I mean, it's just a blessing. I see it as a blessing. You get it. I mean, I'm going to be going into the summer almost kind of like, you know, I wouldn't say mid-season form, but at least preseason form already, and then get an opportunity to just work with amazing kids. I mean, these are the best of the best from all over the place. You know, I don't think that you look at the quarterback position. I don't think I have to worry that the kid's thrown off his wrong foot. You know, those are the things as a high school coach. You know, you're watching all those little things. Now, hell, just let these kids see an athlete get open, get a matchup, get the ball, these guys in space. And, you know, just like Pat said, there's a lot of these kids on here that I coached against that we played against that, I mean, I know that they're what they can do. And I'm going to be a lot happier to see them on my side of the ball than, you know, across the sidelines that I have been for many, many years, but you know, make it fun. I'm the father of two boys that have played in different all-star games. And I think the biggest thing that they take from it are those relationships that they build with the other players on the team that to this day, they're still friends with. I know both of my sons had instances where kids that were rivals from rival schools They're like, boy, I just hated that kid. They got to be at practice and they became best friends. And then you call them, you're like, oh, what are you doing? You know, my youngest son plays at Washington and Jefferson. There's a young man there who's a quarterback that you know, beat us twice in the playoffs. He's not a big fan of, and now they're best friends on campus. And they said one time, do you ever think we'd be best friends? So nurturing those friendships, both as a staff and as players, I mean, that's what football is all about.
I think you make a great point there. Same experience coaching East West, you know, still friends with guys, have them on my cell phone. And that's a pretty cool thing. And it's an underrated or oftentimes overlooked aspect of these all-star games that kids and coaches may not be aware of until they actually get in there. So that's a great point. You talked about it a little bit, you know, but how do you treat all-star games differently than you would, you know, going into game one in the season? Like, obviously you can't have your whole offense in there and you're very much limited defensively. Pat, like, what are some things, without giving away your game plan here, what kinds of things are you thinking to try to, because you kind of have to simplify it for the kids that, you know, they need to learn a lot in a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part, you know, simple thing, you know. But the nice part is, again, like Roger said, you know, it's pretty much get the ball in the guy's hands and make some plays. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, the guys you have that can do that. You know, I mean, you do have a distinctive advantage, obviously, from an offensive standpoint, where you know exactly what the defense has to do. You know, the coverages they have to stick in. So, I mean, you know, you kind of cut down on some things there. You know, I just think, you know, you play to your strengths. You know, you know what kind of quarterbacks you have. You know, if you got a quarterback that's a thrower. I mean, I think it's like what you have to throw the ball, what, 40% of the time, I think it is. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you know what you have to do. And I'm just looking at it from a, you know, I think, you know, we have a choice. I think that's the biggest thing that kind of surprised me about this game, you know, becoming the head coach, was the selection process of the players. Mm-hmm. You know, and listening to, I mean, listen, I had a lot of people contact me and say, man, I don't understand how this guy didn't make it. I don't understand how that guy didn't make it. And I'm like, look, man, I have nothing to do with that. You know, I have zero to do with how anybody got on this team. I don't even have a kid on my team on the team. So, you know, if I was going to pick who I was putting on a team, I'd obviously take care of my own first, or at least some Schuylkill County kids I'd have in there. But, you know, it's, you know, just seeing how talented, you know, these kids are. And, you know, I watch film on every single one of them, you know, and just going through and seeing, you know, I mean, you're like, oh my God, this kid's a D back, but man, is he a great receiver, you know? And, sure. You know, they can pretty much play anywhere. I mean, you know, we got the Mahala kid from Palmerton that's going to Lehigh to quarterback. You know, like, wow, man, he might be our best safety on the team too.
Yeah, right.
You know, you have so many guys, and I think maybe that's the biggest challenge of an all. I mean, I've coached, you know, obviously in this game as an assistant, but, you know, we have a county game here where we split the, you know, Schuylkill County has 16 high schools in it. We play 8-8, you know, north against south, and I've coached in that game about 6 times. And I think maybe the worst part is, you know, trying to get it, make everybody, you know, part of the game, you know, getting people touches, and, you know, because you have so many guys, so many choices and stuff. So it's, you know, that is a challenge, but, you know, it's a good challenge.
Sure. We had actually earlier on the podcast, before you guys came on, Ed Gallagher was on talking about the whole selection process, which is something you might want to go back and listen on. It's a grueling process for guys that, you know, all of us are basically volunteers, you know, so, but it's not easy sometimes to split hairs, you know, because you end up having to do that. Coach Beidle, what about you in all-star games?
Yeah, I mean, just touching on what you said, I was part of the selection process this year as well, and I agree, it's tough, it's really tough. You know, one of the things with the East-West game, I think I would think what I'd like to see moving forward would be that the head coach has maybe one or two of his own picks that can select one or two positions. You know, whatever you just say, you know, this one or two spots, whatever, because we really have no control whatsoever on even knowing who the next player is that's up.
Good luck with that, coach.
Yeah, I know.
That's why the process exists, because we might have some guys that do a little too much.
Yeah. Well, you know, the same thing is that all of a sudden you get a lot of kids from a lot of different schools, and you know, in terms of the process and the players, I mean, they're all selected for a purpose, and the number of head coaches across the state that went in to put the time in to select these kids, you know, you're getting good players. It just might not be what you envision as a head coach, as something that you see, you know, how would you want to run a team? You know, I mean, you might have a quarterback who is a great scrambler, but you can't have a quarterback run around all the time because it doesn't count as a pass. And then you're stuck, you know, within the rules. But, you know, really the same thing. Try to get players, try to get a chemistry. I think that's the biggest thing. When you look at quarterbacks, you know, they have to get the ball to receivers. And do they have a chemistry? You know, our quarterback from the West team and one of our offensive athletes, they went to the same school. They teamed up for a lot of touchdowns. And so I know that they're going to come in already and they're going to have a great chemistry together. Same with the offensive line. You know, those guys have to develop a chemistry as well. And, you know, when you look at the players, it's really just about players. You know, Find something that works. But, you know, without getting into it too much, I think for me as the head coach, we're going to coach situational football more than we're going to, like, if, you know, the three of us are head coaches, we have series, we have things that we're going to install, right? Like you start with inside zone read, and then your RPO is off, but we'll probably all have some sort of a process. When you look at an all-star game, it's more about a coaching of a situation than it is, you know, doing our regular installs. So we have to get from that aspect of, you know, as a head coach, we're looking at it. We all have installations and the process we go through. Well, you know, our installation has to be, all right, we're going to have a 15-minute period. These are our third and long plays. This is what we want to get in formation-wise. This is what we want to do. And you coach the situation a little bit more so than you do an installation of, say, your offensive and defensive systems that we're accustomed to. So we have to move out of that comfort zone that we've had as head coaches when we're running our football programs.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But, you know, the one thing I've always found in coaching these games, and these guys are coming from all over either the eastern portion or western portion of the state, how quickly they do bond. You know, by the end of the first practice, guys are talking to each other. Oh, do you know so-and-so? Oh, yeah, we played against him. And some of that stuff happens pretty quickly and pretty organically that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think coming in. So,
right.
You know, so those are cool things too. You know, when we picked captains, it's amazing how quickly kids are pretty perceptive on, you know, all those kids and on your rosters are leaders. They all are leaders, but they can figure out pretty quickly, like, hey, these guys are probably better leaders than even I was. And they vote for other kids. It's really interesting how that all happens. So are we going with wristbands? What are we going with?
Well, I'm gonna see if I can't sneak our go routes system into the game. I didn't see that in the rules.
So. We tried that. I know we've tried that. I don't know exactly. I'm not sure which. I think they tried that last year. So that's something we'll have to look up for you guys to make sure they can do that. Because I think people used mine, but I don't.
What's funny, Chad, is that I went to college to be a lawyer. and that's what I was supposed to be. And then I just fell in love with football, and Coach Monas was like, you know what, you could turn this into, you could still coach football and you could go and get a degree in teaching, when it comes to rules, the lawyer in me always comes out.
Yeah, I gotcha. Pat, what are you thinking as far as your install? Are you going to use wristbands, or if go routes are available, you're going to use those?
I'll have to be totally honest here, and I hate to sound like this way. Maybe you guys think a little less of me, but I'm not real so sure. I'm not so sure what the go route system is.
Oh, it's kind of like a self-contained system. Like the kids wear devices, and you can wirelessly shoot them to play.
Oh, geez. See, I'm from Schuylkill County. We're lucky we have internet.
I'll tell you what, Pat. I'll tell you all about it after the game. And then if you sign up, I get a little kickback on my next year's invoice.
I actually just wrote it down here. I wrote it down because I
Dorout. Coach Bidle's trying to get a free subscription for 1 year out of the deal.
Well, hey, I'll give him a plug. I'm gonna tell you what, it's the best thing we ever did. We were Ligonier Valley and Pine Richland were the first two schools in Pennsylvania to get them, and we couldn't live without them right now.
Yeah, wow. How long ago was that? Because I might dispute that.
2016.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I had to check back, but it's not a pissing contest anyway. So I take it
you use them, Coach?
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, what we found the best use for them is actually defensive scout team.
That's exactly what we use them for, too.
Because our defensive staff gets annoyed when our scout offense goes too fast. Like they're trying to coach situationally, and our defense coordinator gets annoyed with me. So I'm like, we got the next play to go. But
yeah.
So you guys mentioned a couple guys on your roster. Anybody that stands out a little bit? You know, obviously linemen are tough because they're going to be in one-on-one situations. And honestly, you know, some guys come from high schools that don't throw a lot and don't pass protect a lot. And now they're going to be asked to do that. But any guys that stand out for you? I know you mentioned a few.
I don't really want to say by names yet. I want to talk about groups. I'll start with the offensive line since those guys were, I evaluated them with up at State College, and, you know, this is a big, strong physical group. We have a Frelich Award finalist and winner in the group. We got some guys that I played against that are 300 plus pounds, and they're just maulers. And you know, going in, I'd like to think offensively, you know, this is a very fine offensive line group. And then you couple them with two really good dual threat quarterbacks, two very different running backs, I will say. I mean, one kid is just tough as nails, and the other kid is just and I coached against him. I mean, he's got speed, he's got quickness, he's got power. And then with the receivers and those guys we'll call athletes, I mean, they're a very skilled group. And I'm intrigued by our tight end who's almost 6'8". And I saw him, they did a lot of different things with him that we did with our tight end that we had several years ago, spread out in line, off the line. Really intriguing athlete. And then on the defensive side, those guys, I mean, you know, a couple of them, again, guys that I played against, extremely athletic, extremely fast kids, which I think you need to have in this game, especially, you know, hunting down quarterbacks, et cetera. The linebackers are, I mean, they are downhill right now kind of guys, and they just run. In terms of the secondary, I haven't seen those guys as much, and you know how it is. This is where we've had a lot of turnover. The original guys we had were all evaluated, and then next thing, then this kid pulls out. So of the entire group, that's the group that I'm not entirely very comfortable evaluating just because I haven't seen enough film on them yet.
Okay.
But overall, you know, I'm really happy with the team that's been put together. And it's crazy whenever you look at the size of these guys, and they're like the offensive and defensive linemen, they're just so big anymore. I wish I had more kids this size, but at Ligonier Valley, but hey, it'll be fun in May.
Yeah. And small school, for everybody, small school doesn't indicate the size of the player. It just means that you're in 1A through 3A. Coach Mason, you have any comments on your roster?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in the same boat. I mean, like, you know, obviously I know some of these kids, you know, just because, you know, some of them are somewhat local and, you know, going to some 7-on-7s. I'm pretty good friends with Coach Irby at Steele High, you know, so we get to go down there and we have a lot of his kids on the team, you know, and rightfully so, you know, and, you know, I mean, I did the same thing, you know, like Roger was saying, you know, well, I think that was something that kind of shocked me a little bit, was the, you know, amount of kids like dropping out and stuff. And there's a lot of guys, and if I can remember correctly, I know last time I coached the game, we had some guys dropping out. We actually picked one guy up, I think, on a day of the game, which was an interesting situation. It was in Harrisburg and the kid was local. So, we added him that day because some kids just didn't show up for the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the roster I'm looking at right now is probably not going to be the roster we have come game day, because I'm sure there's going to be some kids dropping out, probably some track guys that might make states that they didn't realize they were going to. But I really like our skill guys. And, you know, obviously we got, you know, a kid out of, you know, Southern Columbia, you know, a skill kid, and, you know, a couple skill kids out of Steele High. You know, I like our quarterback situation. You know, we got two DBs out of Philly who could really run really, really well. I'm kind of on the opposite side. I was kind of a little bit shocked. Our offensive line isn't as big as I did anticipate. but, you know, it was, you know, watching film on them, a lot of guys from wing T systems, you know, a lot of guards pulling guards and stuff. And I run the wing T. That's what we run. Okay. But obviously I won't be running that.
You can do some of the things.
I can do some of the things. Yeah. But, you know, and it's just, you know, you guys in and out, you know, some of the newer guys that hopped on. I mean, you know, I really like the group athletically. You know, it's a good group of kids, and it's a group I'm really looking forward to. I think it's just going to be those first couple days, you know, trying to figure out exactly who's going to fit in where and where they're going to play. And, you know, I mean, I got our offense ready to go, you know, and, you know, our formations in and all that kind of stuff already. So, you know, I'm ready to go with that. But I guess you just got to see who fits in where.
Yeah. And it's kind of a thing that you, in all-star games, you have to do it on the fly. So, you know, there are, in the East-West game, there are a lot of kids that choose to drop out because of things like track and lacrosse and baseball and those types of things, especially if they make districts and that type of thing. But you'll get your roster settled on that first day and you'll figure it out. That's why you guys were chosen, right?
Yeah, I also think too, Chad, whenever, like what you said, with these kids and the level that they play at football, they know how to run a fade route. They know how to run a post. It doesn't take as much coaching as it does whenever we have a group of kids that, you know, you're teaching them everything about from one step to the next.
Right.
So a lot of these kids are really elite athletes, and they can pick a lot of things up. And for the most part, hey, football's football, right? Like for the offensive linemen, it's simple. You know, Pat and I were both kind of wing T guys. So, hey, gap down backer, how hard can it be? You know, especially if they're elite linemen, you know. They should be able to figure that out real quick.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, I thank you tremendously for coming on tonight and giving us a little bit of a preview. You know, the East-West game has now expanded, obviously. That's why we're talking to you. And there's two games, a small school and a big school, which I think is a tremendous thing for the state of Pennsylvania. Overall, it gets more kids involved, obviously. So we're looking forward to it. And we'll see you out there on Sunday, May 19th, right?
Absolutely. Yep,
Sunday, absolutely. May 19th. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. Good seeing you, right. Roger.
You too, Pat. Take care, buddy.
You too.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You are listening to the Pennsylvania Scholastic Football Coaches Association podcast, sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Incorporated. Now, back to the show with your host, Chad Brubaker.
Okay, I'm here with the big school East-West head coaches, John Donnelly from CB East and Josh Oswalt from Cumberland Valley. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You bet. So we'll get started for people who maybe – from a different part of the state. We'll start with you, John. Maybe give us a little bit of background on your coaching career.
So this will be my 31st year of coaching, which is hard to believe. I started as a GA up at Lehigh in 94. Coached, went over there to Moravian, who was college at that time, now Moravian University, with Tim Montzman. We coached together. He's the head coach at Parkland now. We played against each other in high school, and then we coached together at Lehigh, and then he got the DC job over at Moravian. So I went over with him, jumped on the defensive side for a couple years, and he became the head coach at Southern Lehigh. I went there with him. I became the OC. He left to go to Liberty at that time, so I became the head coach at Southern Lehigh for 3 years, head coach at Quakertown for 7, and have been at East since 2010.
2010. All right. Very good. Josh, you want to do the same?
Yeah. You know, I started my coaching career at Shippensburg University. I was under Coach Rocky Reese in 2008, 2009. Started my high school coaching career at Carlisle High School in 2010, where I was the head coach there for 6 years before moving on to Central York High School. I was at Central York for 4 years before taking over Cumberland Valley in December of 2019. So I just ended my fourth year at Cumberland Valley, my 14th year overall as a head coach. I've been in District 3 for all those years.
All right, awesome. So real quickly, what is your you guys have both coached in the East-West game before, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So what years were those coaching?
I was 2017. I was 2017, and Kevin Steele was the head coach out of Bedford. He was the West head coach that year.
Yeah, I want to say it was 2018 for the East-West game when I was an assistant in that with Brian Gilbert. And then I was an assistant with the Big 33 in 21. So we were going to be in COVID, and then we bumped it a year. So I believe that was in 2021, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 2022.
Okay. All right. So, you know, it brings up an interesting thing. And you guys obviously have state all-star game experience, which is one of the criteria, by the way. I know that comes up sometimes, like how do guys get to be a head coach in the Big 33 or the East-West games. And, you know, there is a ladder, so to speak, to climb there in terms of being an assistant, learning kind of how it works. So what have you learned from coaching in the East-West or even the Big 33 game, John, in terms of how to prepare? Because it's very, very different from preparing your team. You know, guys are coming and they don't even know each other really. And you have a few weeks to really get them up to speed.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, even I think back to our county game, we used to just have a Bucks County game. We'd split it north and south. And then we decided to make it Bucks versus Montgomery County. And that was a pretty good deal. And that went right up into COVID. And then COVID kind of killed that. But what was different about that situation was that we had a much longer time to prepare. Kids obviously weren't traveling from as far. So it was a lot easier to get more installed for the game. Obviously, the defense is always a little bit, you know, limited in terms of what they can do. They want to see points in the game. So when you ratchet it up to, you know, the state all-star games, you know, and obviously kids are traveling from further away, but you're limited in what you can install because, you know, there's a lot you can do, but this is what we're going to do to try to make it simple and easy. And so the guys can be effective on the field and play fast. So I always think it's just limited in what you can install. But I think the great thing about it, obviously, is that the level of talent, like, you know, that you see, and I know Josh has it on his side as well. And to be able to coach that and to be able to interact with kids from different parts of the state and their programs. And just like, you know, being part of the PSFCA, just being able to interact with coaches from around the state, to me, it's like football gold. Like, you can't beat it.
Good. Josh, what do you think on preparing for all-star games?
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, like Coach said, but obviously the importance of being super organized and ready to go. I mean, time is limited just by limiting our playbooks and what we're doing, but also just making sure we're organized with that practice time. And, you know, we have virtual meetings set up with our guys to install and introduce prior to getting together on April 28th. But just making sure they understand the practice plan. It's out in front of them ahead of time. And we treat them like college players because they're ready to be moving on to that next level. So, but like Coach said, the amazing talent that you get to work with. I remember in 2017, Jaquan Brisker was the safety for us in that game, and just letting those guys go play ball and do the things that they do. It's fun to watch. It's a special part of it.
Yeah. For those who are unaware, there's specific rules for defenses. Defenses are very limited in most all-star games. The East, West, and Big 33 are no different. You have to play man free and basically play a 4-4. And so there's not a ton of things that you can do defensively. I always found that was difficult in practice, that when I was an assistant, I was the defensive backs coach. And I'm like, I don't know how many man-to-man drills I can run here in 3 hours, you know, basically becomes a little redundant, you know, but you know, the nice thing about that is you could kind of get into the weeds a little bit in terms of teaching, you know, and drilling and teaching man-to-man coverage, which obviously most programs play and those kids definitely play. So, so have you guys had an opportunity? I knew, you know, we talk about a little bit in the East-West games, a lot of kids drop out. The turnover rate is high because of track and baseball and lacrosse and, you know, other things that kids might be doing. Have you had a chance to look over your rosters a little bit? Obviously, you've communicated with kids and stuff, and you don't necessarily have to say anybody's name, but, you know, have you had an opportunity to, you know, talk to some kids about some things already on the phone or maybe in a Zoom meeting or something like that?
Josh, why don't you take that one? Good, bud.
Yeah, that's fine. We haven't had a Zoom meeting yet, but, you know, I've been communicating with our guys daily. To be honest with you, the big portion of leading up to the end of this month, and I know Coach Donnelly and I have been in communication on this, is just getting paperwork in and yeah, and shoring up all the things that we need with the physical paperwork and insurance information, you know, because again, to play our game, we need to make sure that we have all I's dotted and T's crossed and ready to go. But yeah, we're going to actually have our first meeting here in the next week or two. Just honestly looking at our guys and trying to figure out what's the best fit for them has been fun for us as a staff. And just seeing the guys that we do have in the game, the quarterbacks that we have, the offensive skills that we have, like you said, defensively, it's a little limited, but it still gets you excited to see what, you know, what these guys have done, what they have accomplished, where they're going, and the great programs that they're coming from.
Yeah. You know, before John goes, you guys know your staffs like by heart.
Yeah.
You're on the spot. Go ahead, Josh. You can tell. I'll put you on the spot first.
No, that's fine. I'll do my best. Yeah. Jason Warner out of New Oxford. He's District 3. Mike Pearson out of District 4. He's at Williamsport. Ron Prady is at, this is where I'm going to get.
Greater Latrobe.
He's at Latrobe. Okay. Ron's at Greater Latrobe. I have, hold on here.
Eric Christie
up at Butler. And I have Dana Brown from Baldwin.
From District 7.
From District 7, yeah.
John, go ahead, whatever order.
Yeah, sure. From Southern Lehigh, District 11, Phil Sams. From District 1, Shelton Ham, Troy Gore. From District 11, Tom McGoey from Pottsville. From District 1, from a lower Marion, Joe Augustine. And then from District 3, other side of the side, Coach Oz had to square me up on this, the other side of the river in District 3, Lance Dean from CD East.
My guy Lance, he's in our conference, in our division, but on the other side of the state.
Yeah, that is well, I'll let John answer his question about, you know, taking a look at the roster, but that is something maybe we should discuss about.
I think it's a good
about
idea.
The line. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, that's cool. I got educated on that. I'm like, how is that possible? But I got educated thanks to Coach. So yeah, look, I think an hour before we started doing this, I was texting Coach Oz some paperwork. So we are still in the midst of getting that done. We're getting awfully close. I know Homer's been pretty pleased with the coaches on both sides in both games for getting things done pretty quickly, but it's fluid. There's people changing all the time and, you know, for a variety of different reasons. But we've had a chance to have a team meeting, you know, virtual, and our, you know, the staff has done a great job of connecting with guys. We just met myself and one of the coaches with one of the quarterbacks just virtually, just to, you know, start introducing things. So we want to continue to do that as we get ready for the, you know, the two practices on the 28th. And, you know, like Coach, you know, Josh said, is that, you know, the practice is, you know, we're going to try to keep it pretty tight and not practice for a long, long time. But, you know, we're not going to condition guys. We expect them to come in condition. The tempo of practice will be the conditioning. We expect them, like Josh said, to, you know, really handle this professionally. Like, you know, the inmates aren't going to run the asylum. We want it to be fun for them. But I've seen it, quite honestly, in different games that I've been an assistant in where I'm like, wow, I don't know if I would have let that, you know, go in that direction. And so I think there has to be and you do this. And I know Chad and Josh, you would do it, like you established that at the first meeting. I think once it's laid out that the guys understand, look, we want to have fun. We want to win. Right. But you all are getting prepared for most of you to go play at the next level. So, you know, you got to kind of fall into line in that way. So I hope you guys understand what I'm saying. It's not like an iron fist thing. Yeah. But I think we've all seen that in some level. And I think those teams that are run in that way don't typically end up being successful in these kind of games.
Agreed. I just thought of something. Are you guys allowed to use go routes for the game?
No, I think that
didn't we try that a few years back?
Last year, we had a setup with them, but I don't think we have that this year.
So are we planning wristbands or what are we planning? Signals, wristbands?
We're likely going to be signals. That's how I operate. So I believe that's probably how we'll end up doing it.
John, we're going to be signals and wristband. You know, we try to make it like kids are like, hey, is this your system? I'm like, no, it's really try to make it something that is universal in terms of the terminology. And we've used it in other all-star game situations. So it seems to be pretty efficient. So we'll kind of roll with that. So signals and wristband for the quarterback. Yeah,
I think that's a good idea too. Like, in all-star games, I would just write on the wristband, like inside zone right, inside zone left. Yeah. Like the kids, you know, and then the problem, of course, is not everybody runs that, you know, but, you know, they get up to speed pretty quickly because they're pretty good athletes. But, yeah, those are the intricacies or whatever you want to call it, the differences in coaching in all-star games versus, you know, coaching in your own programs where you have to adjust your own terminology. Okay, so let's jump back to the boundary situation. So you have a guy that's in your league, Josh, that is coaching for John on the Big School East. Can you kind of explain? I don't care who explains it, but can you explain how that works?
Yeah, no, that's good. You know, so you look at the makeup of the state, and when you determine the size of schools and the amount of schools on throughout the state, there actually is a natural boundary that is the Susquehanna River. So it's kind of crazy to see, but looking at both the small school and the big school, you know, single A through 6A, if you split it down where the Susquehanna is, it's not smack dab in the middle of the state, but it is pretty good with the, you know, the demographics and the different things that you have with the numbers within the schools. The Susquehanna River is the boundary. So if you're on the west side of the Susquehanna, you're considered Pennsylvania West. If you're on the east side of the Susquehanna, you're PA East. So two districts are split right in half. You have District 3, which is your Harrisburg area, you know, York, Lancaster, where I'm at in Mechanicsburg, and District 4 with Williamsport and Mifflin Town, I believe. Like, those guys are on separate sides, but it is interesting. Mid Penn, we have a handful of teams on the east side. Lancaster Leb is on the east side. York Adams is on the west side. You know, so it's an even split down between District 3 and, like I said, District 4 as well.
Okay. So let's jump in. You know, we kind of alluded to how to set up practice, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, your practice dates and leading up into the game, you know, your kind of plan for preparation?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think that first, fingers crossed, like for the first practice, when we check everybody in, everybody's paperwork's there, everybody has arrived safely, you know, kind of getting them acclimated, you know, because we're going to have the practices at Central Bucks East. So that's going to be a ride for some guys, you know, like for Lance Dean, for instance. You know, he's going to drive on those two Sundays a distance. But the good news is when the game's being played out at Cumberland Valley, you know, he's got an easy ride. So I think just the logistics of all that will be, you know, as long as we've already met and we've kind of laid all that out, you know, hey, guys, you got to make sure you have your equipment, all the things that you need to have. But, you know, we're not going to practice for 3 hours a session. We're going to be 2 hours and 10 minutes per session. We're going to spend time with the special teams. I do believe that when all things are equal, and I think they are in an all-star game in terms of talent, in terms of, hey, the defense can only do this. I believe the attention that's paid to special teams is going to be huge. I know Josh believes in that. So I think that's going to be a big determining factor. We're excited about the guys that are the specialists that are on our side. So that's something that we want to make an impression on, because I think also for the guys that are going to go on and play in college, and many of them are, you know, as a freshman, you know, how do you make an impression? Right? Yeah. Look, I'm willing to run down on kickoff to make a play. So, you know, if they can get that mentality, because many of them haven't been doing that for a long time, right? So now we're asking you to do that because we've got 38 kids or whatever it is, or 35 kids. So we need you to do that. And, hey, by the way, this is something that can help you next year. You know, like no job is too small for you. Is kind of
that's
what
a really good approach, John. I like that.
Thanks. Go ahead, Josh.
Josh, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, with us, it's similar. We're going to be at Richland High School on April 28th, and then again on I believe it's the 12th of May. Our practices are not going to, you know, go over 2 hours, similar to yours, John. You know, it's funny, Chad, you may not know this, but John and I, we get our programs together, and we're going to do it again this summer. And we pretty much collab on a, like a drills and skills day with both our programs. So we share different ideas, and we're able to coach up each other's teams. And it's pretty cool to just kind of see the nuances that each staff brings. And it's pretty unique.
Do you switch?
No. So like we integrate. So we're together. So like, his O-line coach is doing stuff with my O-line coach, and our kids are together, and it's really cool. It's a good day, and we really enjoyed it last year. We're doing it again this year, but it's cool to kind of know. I feel like I know John a little bit more as a coach, and what his you know, what he values. We're very similar in that regard. So like you said, the special teams piece is important. And my thing is just, you know, our sport is so you know, you can't just roll the balls out and just be super, super successful. So getting some sort of cohesiveness among each other those 2 days is going to be very important, so that when we arrive to Cumberland Valley on May 19th, there's some sort of gel, and we have an idea of, you know, how we can play together. And if we can play together, obviously that's going to make it successful.
Yeah. So just to kind of wrap this segment up, like, what do you look forward to, or what do you try to get out of All-Star games personally? Like, what stands out to you after All-Star games? In other words, you know, what do you take from it that you value the most? John, you want to go on that one?
Sure. I think, you know, it's relationships. So, you know, just this past, I guess it's about a year now, my son and I were traveling around looking at different schools, and we were up in Orono, Maine. And ran into a Stewart kid from Coatesville, who I'd coached in the Big 33 game. And he came running over, and it was like we had just seen each other yesterday.
Yeah.
And I ran up into, you know, Nolan Rucci's back at Penn State. He was on that team. and we ran into each other at the PSFCA meeting up in January, and it was great. You know, dabbed each other up, and you know, I've gotten to know his father, and that all started really through a lot of the team camp stuff, Chad, that you kind of said, hey, this is the greatest thing that we do for our program. So you, I thank you for getting us involved in that. So, you know, we got to connect with Warwick at Millersville. So I got to know Todd Rucci, and obviously, you know, Josh and I are still doing that up at East Stroudsburg last year. So we saw each other on a couple different levels, but to me, it's about the relationships that you make and getting to meet these kids and following their progress, you know, when they, you know, progress to the next level.
Josh, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, mine's relationships too. I mean, he talked about the players, but I want to talk about the coaches. I feel like, you know, I would not know you guys as well as I do if it weren't for, you know, the PSFCA and the different things that we do. You know, coaching in this game in 2017, you know, I'm close with, you know, like I referenced it before, Kevin Steele, Bedford, Roger Beidle out at Ligonier Valley, and all the
who
coaches.
Is the, who, by the way, is the head coach at the small school East-West game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Matt Humbert and TJ Plack were both on that staff with me that year. We just had an awesome time. You know, we stay in contact, obviously, with Cumberland Valley hosting the state championships. I was able to host both TJ and Matt and their teams this past year in the state finals. And, you know, that's what it's about. I mean, we're all in it for the same reasons, most of us, as far as, you know, giving back to our players, giving back to our organizations, giving back to the state of PA. And, you know, it's to me, that's what, you know, it's rewarding. And I'm able to share the stories, but also share the experiences with great guys across the state.
Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on tonight. Best of luck with your teams. And do we have early line on the game or any favorites? What do we?
I'm glad that Susquehanna is hard enough to spell. So like, if we had to put that in the notes, if we made it the Schuylkill River, we'd all
forget it
on that one.
Forget it. All right, guys. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks, Chad.
You have been listening to the Pennsylvania Scholastic Football Coaches Association podcast, sponsored by Susquehanna Valley Sports, Incorporated. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a future episode. Have a question for the show? Email psfcapodcast@gmail.com. We may answer your question in a future episode. Thanks for listening.